From WXXI News, this is Education Friday on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was formed just a few days ago when New York State and the Education Department released 50% of the questions from 2014 in the grades 3 through 8 assessments regarding the Common Core. And this is a good look at what students are facing in classrooms. Now, for some parents and teachers, you look at the questions and you might say that it's appropriate. For others, you might look at some of the questions and you might have some issues with the way students are being assessed. Either way, this is a good opportunity to push forward the question on the Common Core and the way teachers are teaching, students are being assessed, etc. This hour, we're going to hear from a member of the State Education Department, and I'll have that interview in just a moment. But first, I want to introduce a couple of our guests, and they're a mom and a child here. We've got Loy Gross and Kira Gross. Loy is from Batavia, and Kira is a student in going to be in ninth grade, right, Kira?
Yeah.
All right, so Loy, you are a math tutor, among many other things. A little bit of your own background first.
I am a math tutor for remedial students at college level. So are the students who are graduating high school and then not able to pass the entrance exam for the college, and so they have to take remedial math. That is what I do.
Okay.
So I'm helping the students that Common Core is supposed to be helping.
Gotcha. And you're a mother of two.
I am.
A mother of two. Kira, you're going to be in ninth grade at what school? Are you allowed to say? Go ahead. Explain.
I'm going to be homeschooling, so it's called the Gnomon and Starry Academy.
Very good.
The Wise Wizard in Elvish.
Loy's got a big smile about that. When did you decide that homeschooling was the option that you wanted to go with, Loy?
When we decided was very shortly before the school year ended. We had been talking about it.
This past school year?
This past school year, yes. We'd been talking about it since October and all through the school year, discussing what was going on in the school, what was going on with our children, how they were feeling, trying to work with teachers and the administration to create a positive experience. And towards the end of the year, it became obvious that it just was not happening with the Common Core and the requirements that they bring down. And understand that my children's school is a fabulous school. We really enjoyed it. It was challenging. It was interesting.
School was it, Loy?
Pavilion Central School. It's out in Genesee County. It's a very small rural school with a very high poverty rate and a very high graduation rate. So it is a fantastic school. But the yoke that they are under with the Common Core was not allowing the teachers to use their own professional discretion and teach the way that they had been teaching successfully for so many years. So we decided that since my children are not getting any younger, we have to pull them out until we can get the whole thing fixed.
Kira, how do you feel about going into a year of school homeschooled now?
Well, I know that I can do what I want now, so that's exciting.
Not exactly what you want.
I can do reasonably what I want. I know that we can take a lot more field trips. We go traveling a lot and camping, and so it's exciting to be able to go and see the stuff that we're going to be taught about in the new school year. So.
Okay. Well, before we go any further here, and we're going to invite your phone calls and comments about what you might have seen regarding the Common Core questions, and I know that Loy and Kira have a lot to say on that. We were glad that this morning the State Education Department was willing to take some time for us on rather short notice, and I was able to talk to Ken Wagner, the Deputy Commissioner of Curriculum, Assessment, and Education Technology for New York State. Let's listen to the conversation with Ken Wagner, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about what we've seen this week regarding the test questions. Ken, let me start by asking you, a common question we've heard is, why release half the questions and not all of them?
Yeah, so we had gotten many requests that people wanted to see more of the test questions so they could better understand how the Common Core tests measure the Common Core standards. And last year we had released 25%. This year we increased that by 100% to go to 50% of the test questions. What we had committed to do is to release just as many of the test questions that we can without undermining the quality and the fairness of the Common Core Assessment Program. We need to have questions in the bank, so to speak. It's called an item bank, so we can design future test questions. We believe that we can only go up to 50% right now. We had asked for additional funds to be included in the budget so we could go to a higher percentage. We had wanted to go to 90% of the scored test questions over a three-year period, but that request for funds was not granted.
Are there any questions that we've seen in this set that was released this week that you feel might be questionable in terms of whether they're appropriate? You know, we've seen a lot of talk about the Pecos bill question for the fourth graders, or the question when it comes to math with the number 344,586. A lot of complaints about those particular questions. Do anything stand out to you that you've seen released that you'd say, yeah, we'll rethink those?
We're always looking for feedback about the tests, and by releasing 50% of the test questions, then that will allow for additional feedback. Every single test question goes through an extensive development and review process, including the involvement of New York State educators, New York State teachers at each step of the way. It takes about 2 years to develop a test question from the time it's first written to the time it's field tested to the time that it finds itself on an operational test. So we feel comfortable with all of the test questions that go through that process. And now that we're making 50% of the test questions available this year, the public will have a better sense of what those questions are, and they can give us feedback as they see fit.
Are you comfortable that the questions that have been released have been taught to appropriately? And now I'm using poor English, and I probably will get a poor grade on this. Are teachers teaching to these questions and to this test appropriately?
Well, we don't want teachers to teach to the test. We want teachers to teach the standards that are required by New York State learning standards, and then the test measures student progress on those standards as well. The standards were adopted 4 years ago in 2010, so we're in the fourth year of a phase-in. That will be a 12-year phase-in process. And with the class of 2022, 12 years after the standards were adopted, those students will, for the first time, have to pass a Common Core Reader's Exam at the proficiency level in order to graduate. So we're in the fourth year of a 12-year phase-in. We have every bit of confidence that New York State teachers are teaching the standards in their classrooms, and then students who are taught by those standards, then those students will be more than prepared to take a Common Core test.
Yeah, I certainly phrased that poorly. I think the better question is, do the questions that were released this week reflect what is being taught in class? And you're saying the answer to that is yes.
The questions that are on the test reflect the standards, so the standards are being taught in the classroom, so the answer to that question would be yes.
How much feedback have you had since releasing the 50% of the questions?
So it's only been a few days. People, I'm assuming, are still reading through and digesting, and we have email inboxes where people are always welcome to send us feedback, and we, of course, have seen some media articles being written about it as well. So it's a process, and we're looking forward to continuing to get feedback.
In many ways, it's been pretty apolitical in terms of the concern expressed about Common Core, whether it's in Western New York or New York State or across the country. And a lot of the complaint is about the implementation, et cetera. Have you been surprised, or has it changed the way you have had to approach Common Core standards in this state at all, seeing the reaction, some of the hesitation, the Gates Foundation making some comments in recent weeks about delaying for a couple of years, evaluating teachers, et cetera?
Yeah. So change is always complicated. Change is always difficult. Change always takes time. We have had broad consensus that it was appropriate to raise our expectations for all of our students, and our New York State learning standards allow us to raise expectations for all of our students. I have yet to hear anyone ask us to lower our expectations for our students. So, of course, we're proceeding with those higher expectations. Will it take time for people to implement the standards fully. Yes, these kinds of changes do take time, which is why we have a 12-year phase-in process set up, where the first class that needs to pass a Common Core Regents exam at the proficiency level is the class of 2022, which is 12 years after the standards were adopted.
And Ken, just let me ask you briefly about a question we've heard raised by a number of parents, which is that children with varying either disabilities or a child with autism, a child with a different kind of a diagnosis, are they being treated appropriately in terms of the way they are assessed in these tests? And should there be more latitude to sort of shape standards more broadly?
So it is always challenging to match instruction to the unique needs of every single child. That's always been the case prior to the Common Core. For our students with English language learner needs or students with disabilities needs, that challenge is always present for each of us, and especially for the teachers that support these students with those needs. We believe that raising expectations always results in higher achievement for all students. So when you raise the bar and you expect more from children, they always achieve at higher levels than when you lower the bar and don't expect as much. The trick, of course, is to provide the unique instruction to support students through that process so students have positive experiences as they're learning. As far as the assessments, we have asked the federal government for a waiver to allow us to measure student progress for students with the most severe learning needs a bit differently than we currently do, to assess students' progress for students with the most severe learning needs more at their instructional level as opposed to their enrolled grade level. That waiver has not yet been approved by the federal government.
Our thanks to Ken Wagner. That's Ken Wagner, the Deputy Commissioner of Curriculum, Assessment, and Education Technology of New York State, on the phone with us from Albany today. All right, Lloyd Gross and Kira Gross are in studio, a parent and a ninth grader-to-be from Batavia. Both of them have been very firm about Common Core and their problems with it. Lloyd, you heard him, you heard the Deputy Commissioner talking about why they released the questions they did and the fact that they're looking for feedback, but this is a two-year process. The questions have been vetted carefully. What were some of your takeaways from that interview?
I really would like to know who vetted those questions. When you look at some of these questions, some of the math questions, there are two correct answers. There are ambiguous answers. When you look at the ELA, there are questions where adults will argue over which is the correct answer.
You don't mean all of the questions, I assume, that have been released.
I don't mean all of them, but when you can find such a significant number of questions with obvious problems, and they've only released half of them, then obviously their vetting process is not working as it should.
Let me open the conversation to phone calls. If you want to call in and talk about the questions that you've seen or issues you have, positive, negative, or otherwise with Common Core, we'd love to hear from you. The number is toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or if you're right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I referenced a couple of them in my interview with Ken Wagner. Let me go ahead and read those just to kind of give our audience a flavor of what we're talking about, because I know that Kira and Loy have brought some questions as well. And Kira is going to be able to talk to us about the questions that she took as a ninth grader, both in a ninth grade assessment for the sort of the old style Regents and also separately Common Core algebra, right? Is that right? Okay, so we're going to get to that in a second. But let me read a couple of the questions that were released by New York State this week. Here's one for a fourth grader, a fourth grade math question. Quote, in the number 344,586, how many times greater is the value represented by the 4 in the 10,000s place than the value represented by the 4 in the 1,000s place? You know, if you actually sit down and think about it, you could probably figure that out. But it's a bit of a word pretzel, and I think that's been some of the complaint about that, is it's quite pretzely for a fourth grader to try to discern exactly what they're being asked. Loy, do you have a problem with that question?
Well, it depends on – I would say that that's not a math question as much as it is a reading comprehension question. There are certainly easier ways to phrase that question so that it becomes purely an analysis of how well the student understands the math.
Okay, fair enough. And here's the Pecos Bill question that has a lot of people fired up. This is, I'm trying to make sure I understand what level. What level was the Pecos Bill?
That was fourth grade.
Fourth grade. Okay, here's the question. After reading a section of the reading comprehension on Pecos Bill, here's the question. Quote, why is Pecos Bill's conversation with the cowboys important to the story? And then the student has four choices. A, it predicts the action in paragraph 4. B, it predicts the action in paragraph 5. C, it explains the choice made in paragraph 10. D, it explains the choice made in paragraph 11. And the complaint is that this question requires, for a 9-year-old, a lot of flipping back and forth and sort of you read it, then you've sort of got to re-sift through it. And, you know, the state may say, so what, Loy? But what do you say?
Well, I know a fair number of adults that could not hold 5 paragraphs worth of information in their head all at the same time. You're talking about loading paragraphs 4, 5, 10, 11, plus the conversation with the cowboys, all into your working memory at the same time, sifting through all of that information at once, and then remembering that 2 of the choices are predicts and 2 of the choices are explains. So it's a different kind of analysis for each one.
So you're saying that for a 9-year-old, that's a lot to ask.
Certainly, especially with the fact that this is part of a 90-minute test. There are a large number of questions on this test, and this human brain can only take so
right.
much.
Right. This is not a long answer, take 15 minutes for this. This is part of a 90-minute exam in which you're going to have to try to sift through this one pretty quickly and move on. But let me try the flip side, Loy. Mm-hmm. The state may say, that is a lot to ask of a 9-year-old, and we have to ask a lot of 9-year-olds now. The world is competitive.
Well, the world is competitive, and the state is going to go back to the whole PISA score. Theoretically, or as some people claim, America is falling by the wayside comparing with other countries when we compare our PISA scores to other countries' PISA scores. And the problem that I always have with that is that we're never comparing apples to apples. Over in China, they only test the best and the brightest students.
Which, that is true.
In some countries, take Finland, for example, has only 6% poverty in the entire country. That's their average. So if we take and we slice our PISA data so that it matches. So say we compare our PISA data for those school districts in the United States that have 6% poverty, and we compare that to Finland, we beat them. And if we take only the best and brightest students in America, and we compare those PISA scores to China, we beat them. When we're actually comparing apples to apples, America is not falling behind. You look at the number of patents that are coming out of the United States of America. You look at the number of inventions. You look at the progress in the technology and all of the industry that is coming out of our country and tell us that we're falling behind. It's not really happening.
Let me get to the phones. We already have a caller here, and this is Mike in Irondequoit. Mike, thanks for calling Connections.
Good afternoon. You picked the hot buttons issues, you do. Also, retired teacher. Teachers never stop teaching. But I'm accustomed to always calling Albany to correct recent exam questions that were in error. One of the problems I have with Common Core is that when you say not enough students are reaching the bar, we're going to raise that bar even higher and see how many can fail to reach the higher bar. Now, in kind of foolish. The high-stakes testing went out in industry in the 1950s. We don't do that kind of testing in industry. Why do we inflict it on our kids now? It's just not working. One thing I will say for Common Core, we are the only country in the industrialized world that does not have a common set of requirements for graduation. We have 51 different sets of requirements, one for each state in Washington, D.C. The states make up their own. What does that mean? Well, it means whatever the states want it to mean. That's kind of unfortunate. In our sort of mobile society, you go from one state to another, and all the rules change. We question the wisdom on that. The problem is less the common core as far as the thinking goes, but the implementation and most of all the high-stakes testing is its greatest flaw. You know, we always have said one size does not fit all, but boy, that's certainly what we're ramming down the throats of every kid.
Mike.
So I'm going to, yeah.
Oh, no, I was just going to say thanks for the call, and anything else to add before I kick it to our mother-daughter panel here?
Nope, I'm going to shut up and listen to your discussion on the air.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for the call. Let me start with Lloyd, the parent. What do you think?
Well, I switched schools myself several times when I was in junior high and high school. And having been through that experience, I completely understand the desire for a common set of standards. I do not appreciate the standards that we have been given. The Common Core standards did not involve any early childhood experts, any early childhood teachers. They were not, by and large, not written by educators. They were written, by and large, by bureaucrats, and done so in a manner that did not respect the developmental abilities of the children at each age or each stage of the game. So while I agree, you know, having a set of federal standards would not be a bad idea, I don't think. Okay, I would prefer that, A, those federal standards were optional. So something like what we used to have in New York State, where we had a regular diploma and a regents diploma, you could opt for, if you chose, a federal diploma. But I would also like to see those standards well written by educators and then vetted by educators so that we know that those standards are appropriate and accurate and that they measure those things that we truly value as a nation in terms of what we're teaching our children.
I think maybe the way the Common Core standards came about reflects a little bit of a divide that it tends to be right and left, even though Common Core has been in many ways condemned by folks on the right and left, mm-hmm. and you could say political reasons or not, but you know, the right tends to be more suspicious of public education, the left more supportive of it. That's a big generalization. But in many ways, the Common Core standards came about by a group who thought, you know, we're not happy with the educational standards. We need to take away some of the control of the way the standards are created from the educational department. So they may sit here with you, Loy, and say, I know what you're saying, but we wanted to make sure that there were non-educators helping shape where our students are going.
Perhaps if they were helping, they could have some valuable input from a different perspective. But you certainly would not ask a bricklayer to build a nuclear weapon, okay? When you're teaching children, people think that teaching is very easy, okay? All we have to do is sit in front of them, sit the information in front of them, and they're somehow going to absorb it. Children have different educational needs. When you have 30 children in a room, you have to adapt to all of those children's needs at the same time. It's like putting a puzzle together while it's on a turntable. It's much more difficult than the average person thinks. Until you have actually been a teacher, I don't think you have an appreciation for how complex a topic that is, particularly when you're talking about standards that are going to impact millions of children.
On Twitter, Jen writes to us, Evan, for what it's worth, given that the State Education Department hasn't released item difficulty data, as in how the students did on the items, all adult opinions are just that. What do you think, Lloyd?
That's a good observation. I was going back and forth with my husband last night, and we kind of came to the conclusion that it's highly likely that many of the really difficult questions or many of the questions that were missed most frequently are not among the 50% that were released. And yet, if you look at the past couple of years' worth of test tracking during the Common Core state exams, on average, most students got less than 50% of the questions correct. So they have to have released some of the really bad ones in here.
Let me also point out that in the State Education Department's release, their news release this week, as in conjunction with their release of 50% of the questions, they quoted a number of education officials from around the state offering quotes that, you know, would seem to be supportive of it. And to be fair, I want to read a couple that are close to our area. Again, we're broadcasting in Rochester, throughout the Finger Lakes, essentially from almost to Buffalo, almost to Syracuse, all the way down to Ithaca. And here is The superintendent of the Ithaca City School District, Lavelle Brown, quote, the department's release of the instructional reports and 50% of the 3 through 8 grade exam questions helps to provide our school district with targeted information that we need to best inform instructional practice and meet the learning needs of our students. This is one of multiple measures and resources we use to reflect on our progress towards doing our mission and achieving our vision. And here's Matthew Cole, the superintendent of the Livonia Central School District, quote, the release of specific assessment items provides educators with the ability to analyze student performance, curriculum adjustments, and instructional approaches in a far better context as we continue to calibrate our work with students to meet increased rigor and expectations. We look forward to using these newly released items to further understand the complex changes needed within our classrooms to better prepare our students to be college and career ready, end quote. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have two very specific thoughts on that. The first one is the grading rubric. Okay, one of the things that they have released, not only have they released the questions, but they've also released sample answers showing the grade that each answer would have received. And so it gives you an opportunity to look at the grading rubric and how the state grades the questions. And obviously, teachers and school districts are interested in that because they want their students to do well. But it's a sense of putting the cart before the horse. So instead of teaching our children what we value and then trying to arrange a test in a way that correctly and accurately assesses that, we're instead going to look at the test and then we're going to turn around and teach our children whatever tips or techniques or test-taking voodoo that they need to do in order to get a good grade on the test. And a couple of examples of that, first of all, something that many children are going to be familiar with is something called TQA, or turn the question around. And so if the question is, why did the chicken cross the road? The answer becomes, the chicken crossed the road because. It becomes very formulaic. It becomes very boring. You get 30 answers that are virtually identical. And that's what you get with a standardized test. If you want the children to score well, they all have to write the same thing, more or less. When it comes to high school and they go to write more creative pieces, more interesting pieces, something that's not a boring TQA, becomes very difficult to break them from that mold. So we're actually teaching our students bad habits. And another point that I wanted to make is when you look at the grading rubrics for these tests, you find something really interesting, that students, when they are constructing the responses, if they copy word for word what is in the original text, here's my example, and they copy it word for word, they get a higher credit than those students who paraphrase. Now, paraphrasing is the higher order thinking. That's what we want children to be doing. If we have children who are in third, fourth, fifth grade who are building inferences and paraphrasing, the teachers are shouting hallelujah. Student is not getting the top grade.
Loy Gross and Kira Gross are our guests in studio. Loy is a parent of two in Batavia, and made the decision after this year to go ahead and homeschool starting in the coming school year. Kira is going to be a ninth grader and will be homeschooled. And let's get one more caller in before the break, and then we'll hear about Kira's experience with testing in this past year. We're also going to hear more of the specific questions that were released this week by New York State. But this is Steve and Victor. Steve, thanks for calling.
Thank you. As a person who has had two kids go to school, private and public, and who has taught in community college and high schools as a sub primarily, as an older teacher who couldn't get a full-time job. I'm very concerned about the entire concept, which may be summed up by people talking about preparing for the 21st century. Well, guys, we are in the 21st century, and really we should have been preparing for the 21st century needs in the 20th century, not this century. I think that we have a capability now through computers, et cetera, to do individual educational assessments for every student by early testing, very early and meaningful testing of the sensory apparatus that the kids got at the time, and then design our school system to meet those needs rather than try and stick kids into a classroom, whether it be 20, 30, or 40 kids, to meet the needs of a curriculum. How about that?
Thanks for the call. What do you think, Loy?
Oh, if I had my druthers, every school in New York State, every school in the United States would be a portfolio school. In a portfolio school, there are no standardized tests. The students do their own work. The students' work is put into a portfolio, and then that portfolio is assessed against itself. Rather than comparing the child to some arbitrary measuring stick, what we're trying to say here is, did the child actually learn? Did they grow? Did they develop? And in a portfolio school, a student is allowed to focus their growth into areas in which they're interested in, which is something that we all do as adults. You know, every adult is not terrific at math. Every adult is not terrific at grammar or spelling. But every adult can find something that they are terrific in and passionate about. And in a portfolio school, we do what we say we want to do. We compare the child not against each other, but against themselves to say, did I do better than my yesterday?
Steve, thanks for the call. And let me also explain to our listeners that the gentleman from the State Education Department, that was Ken Wagner, the Deputy Commissioner for Curriculum and Assessment, was able to join me by phone earlier today. We played that recorded interview for you at the beginning of this hour. He could not join us live on the program. I don't think for a second that's a cop-out. This was a rather last-minute request on our behalf today, as a lot was coming together this week. So don't blame the Education Department. In fact, I appreciate Ken Wagner coming on the program today at all and offering their take. If you missed it, their take was that everything is a work in progress, but they wanted to release 50% of the questions because they wanted people to see how students are being assessed and get a chance to have feedback. They said they're starting to hear more feedback, but they are also pretty confident in the test questions because they are developed over 2 years, vetted by a number of people, and they feel very solid about that. We're going to take more of your calls. We're going to take a very short break as well here. I'll let Roger, our engineer, who's doing about 100 things behind the glass, jump back and forth. Let's take the shortest break in radio. We'll come back, talk to Kira about her experience, get more of your calls, and hear about more of these questions that were released this week by New York State. This is member-supported public radio. Coming up in our second hour, the Democrat and Chronicle has moved into the future with really multimedia coverage of events. It's not just an article in the next day's paper. We're going to hear from one of their reporters who covered the aftermath of the Puerto Rican Festival as a great example of how the newspaper has moved into the modern era. We're also going to talk about how you value an NFL franchise. How do they figure out what the Bills are worth? We'll find out next hour.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Harley School, offering full-day preschool classes for 3 and 4-year-olds focused on school readiness and building a positive foundation for learning. The Harley School, joy in learning. Details at harleyschool.org.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Glad to have you on this Friday afternoon, and glad to have Loy and Kira Gross with us. Kira is 14, going to be a ninth grader, and spent this past year taking ninth grade assessment tests and take algebra, for example. Took algebra tests both in the old, kind of the old style Regents, and then Common Core as well. First of all, Kira, how would you compare those sets of tests that you took? Hold on. Let me get that thought. Make sure your mic is up there. I blame the ninth grader. No, I blame Roger behind the glass. That's all right. He's laughing. There you go. I can hear you now. Okay. How would you compare those sets of tests?
I would say that the Common Core algebra test was more of an English test than a math test, given the questions that were asked, because the questions were more, you had to kind of figure out, you had to stop and think about what they were asking you rather than just saying, oh, they're asking me to do this. Because on the original, the old version, I guess you'd say, the Regents test, it was obvious from looking at the questions what they would ask you. But on the Common Core exam, you'd have to stop and think. Sometimes I would spend minutes, like, just thinking about what they're trying to ask.
What they're actually asking you? So,
yeah.
But there's two responses to that, I think, on two sides of this. There's one that would say the state is clumsily wording these questions, and it's actually tripping up students because they don't really even know what they're being asked. Mm-hmm. Or they have to at least spend 5 minutes unpretzeling a question to make sure they do understand what they're being asked. That robs them of precious time. Mm-hmm. And if they're being asked a math question, they shouldn't have to spend 5 minutes making sure they understand the English of it. The other side of that is English is important too, and you have to be able to discern in real life what people are asking you in different scenarios that involve numbers. So, you know, again, the state may defend that as saying the English part of that is appropriate.
Well, It's not just slightly difficult to try and figure out what these questions are asking. It's really, really difficult. I've been ahead in reading for years, and I sat there for.
Loy has told me that you're a very good reader, and that this is that she's nodding right along with you there. Okay. So just in your view as a student, as a very good reading student, was not well worded, clumsy, etc.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly clumsy. It was just really, really difficult to read and figure out what you're trying to do.
Okay, so that's one easy example to see how the Regents versus Common Core are different. What about the way you were taught? You know, the state is saying that their view is teachers are teaching the standards and the test questions reflect the standards, that there's consistency there. What did you think?
My teacher used the modules kind of. She kind of adapted the modules a little bit, and what I saw was different wording. They literally changed the wording of math. They call set notation, range, roster notation, and you can't use FOIL anymore. You have to say double distribution. You literally cannot say FOIL in the classroom. I tried to say FOIL several times. She goes, nope, it's double distribution. They have to change everything.
For those of us who are a little bit removed from those classroom sets, explain FOIL.
FOIL, it's a way to multiply two binomials. It's first, inner, outer, last, or outer, inner, last. I always mix up the middle two last, but you take the first two numbers in the parentheses, you multiply those, you multiply the outside numbers, you multiply the inside numbers, and you multiply the last numbers. If you add all those products together, then you get your answer, and that's why it's called FOIL, because it's the easy way to remember it. And we can't call it FOIL anymore because Common Core says it's double distribution.
Okay. Loy, let me ask the parent then, because I know that frustrates you.
Yes.
Just as it probably frustrated Kira. But again, the state may say that they want students to do a little bit more critical thinking or change some of the set ways we've seen for years, and maybe this is an example.
Well, changing the critical thinking is a good idea, but you have to walk before you can run. And FOIL was always a good way of remembering how to multiply binomials. I mean, I have a math degree. My husband has a math degree. A lot of the people we know have math degrees. We all learned it the same way in FOIL. And the state wants to say, we call it double distribution because now when you have trinomials, we can call it triple distribution and it's all consistent. And that's a lovely concept. But the fact is that we had a system that was working. And I'm old-fashioned. If it ain't broke, why are you fixing it? I'll add to that, when she's talking about some of these questions that had the pretzel wording, okay, there were two questions in specific that actually had higher-level geometric concepts in them, okay? So you're talking about high-level geometry. Geometry is something that we're not supposed to be teaching until the 10th grade, even in the Common Core standards. And yet here we had this question about a garden path in the 9th grade algebra assessment. The garden path, it's a map overhead, and you're supposed to calculate the width of the garden path given the area. That's a high-level geometric concept. There was another one that had a similar issue with a bunch of squares and triangles and how you many count how many of, what was it, what formula matches these triangles, okay, or these squares. And that test was available online, so I quickly went through and answered all the questions myself. And as I quickly went through and answered all the questions, I answered that wrong. I have a math degree. I am a math tutor. I answered it wrong. Because if you don't sit there and laser focus on each question and use your higher order geometry that you have in the back of your head, you're not going to get them right. Many students did not get them right. You also have the example, there was a question with a power of 4. That was never covered in the standards. It's not in the standards, but it was on the test.
Let me jump in, because I know you've actually highlighted specific questions.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to get to a couple of those in a moment. I do want to go to Twitter. Here's Annie on Twitter responding to some of your comments about portfolio schools.
Mm-hmm.
Annie on Twitter says, even in a portfolio school, instruction should be data-driven. Growth and gaps in instruction should be measured. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. You need to know whether or not the student is progressing. My question is whether we're measuring the student against some amorphous standard that we've decided is accurate for all kids being in quotes, or are we measuring that student against their own progress? For me, well, my kids are in competition. My kids are both in competition, and we teach them all the time. You're better when you go to the competition. It's not whether you win first, second, or third. It's whether you did better than you did the last time. It's whether you did the best that you can do. And if the kids do that, they will learn and they will grow and they will do so at their own pace. When you introduce standardization into the mix, you have all kinds of issues with it. Any any parent with a child knows that children don't all develop at the same time. They don't all develop at the same rate. Children have physical growth spurts. What makes you think that their brain doesn't have mental growth spurts? Where what is developmentally appropriate yesterday or tomorrow may not be right for today. And so I think that the best way to teach a child is the way in which that child needs to be taught.
But to Annie's point on Twitter, you're not saying that a portfolio school doesn't have any sort of assessment or measurement.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I'm saying that those assessments and measurements are individualized, personalized.
Yeah.
They're things that mean something.
And I suspect based on Annie's tone, and I don't want to speak for anybody else, but I suspect she may say that the world works in ways that often are first, second, third, et cetera. And that this is sort of a philosophical gap, I think, that people have. I'm not endorsing one side or another. But I think what you're saying is that is has some deleterious effects on education and kids.
I think that it's at a younger age,
yeah,
is very early to be introducing them to you need to be first, second, third. But more than that, I don't even measure my own two kids with the same measuring stick. Okay, I have one child that's good at sports. I have one child that's good at dance. I would never measure them by each other's standards. I would never do that because it's not fair to either of them. When one is at this level of reading and the other is at that level of reading, to measure them against each other, besides introducing the competitive aspect, is completely unfair to the child. And that's what we're doing to these children. When we put them in standardized tests, education reform people will want to say, well, we need to know how this child or this teacher or this school district
right.
is doing compared to everybody else.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you don't know what children you have in this school district versus everybody else. And I don't think that it's all about the data. I think it's about teaching the child. Yes, there's an element of data in there. The question is, do you compare the data across the board and try and make every child standardized? Or do you measure each child individually according to their own needs?
All right, let's talk about some of the questions. We've got Loy Gross and Kira Gross in studio. Loy is a mother of two from Batavia. Kira, going to be a ninth grader, going to be homeschooled after some problems that the family has had with Common Core standards. We reached out to the state, and we're glad that their Deputy Commissioner for Assessment and Curriculum joined us earlier this hour. You're going to be able to hear that interview online later if you want to go back over and hear that. We also reached out to some local superintendents who have shown some support for Common Core. No one else was able to join us in studio, but obviously it's a complex conversation. Earlier this week, New York State released 50% of the questions on the grades 3 through 8 assessments. There were some questions that have stood out to some parents, and Loy, I know you're sort of first among them. What are some of the questions that you would highlight and want to go over and say, hey, mm-hmm. let's look at these?
Well, you pointed out one of the better examples of a developmentally appropriate question in Pecos Bill, in requiring the student to have so much information in their working memory, probably more than what most kids at that age can handle. And some will be able to, but many will not. I'll give you another example. In a fourth grade ELA, there was a story called Lawn Boy. It says in paragraph 5, narrator remembers a story his grandmother told him about his grandfather, and the effect of this story the has on the narrator is to, and there are four choices. And I've had English teachers who will argue that there are two valid choices, but obviously the state will only accept one. There are any number of those situations in the ELA exams. There have been any number of those situations in the ELA modules throughout the year where the fine sifting or the fine detail that is needed to sort of ferret out the correct answer is something that college professors are having trouble doing, particularly in some of the high school modules that have been released. We have an eighth grade ELA question with an absolutely unnecessary commercial reference, a reference to mug root beer. Okay. For many, many years, I did not allow my children to drink mug root beer because it contains caffeine. Why would my child be handed a test with an item on it that I don't endorse as a parent?
That's sort of tangential to the conversation, but it is mm-hmm. odd. You would think they could just say root beer, not a specific
company. You would
think. I mean,
I can read you the sentence. A nearly full cup of mug root beer, little R in circle, had tipped over on the brick floor. That is the whole sentence, and that is the entire context in which the root beer was used. It made a mess, and that was the context in which it was used in the story. And here we have a footnote. Mug root beer, little R in circle, is the registered trademark of New Century Beverage Company.
What am I missing here? Why is that being used? Why do you need mug? Are they...
Why do I need mug root beer?
Do they offer a big donation to the state? I have no idea.
I truly have no idea. And that's what some of the issues are. With many of the passages, you find that they come from publishing companies that are owned by Pearson. Pearson writes the tests. Pearson owns the publishing companies. Pearson just happens to choose passages from their own published works.
You know what? The mug thing is interesting. I'm going to endeavor on my own to get to the bottom of why mug was used. Mm-hmm. We'll get an answer one way or another on that.
I would applaud that effort.
we will. We'll find out. Maybe it was they were trying to be relevant. I don't know. But
perhaps.
Well, that's an odd one. We're going to get back to the phones in just a second as we begin to wrap up the hour. And we have, I think we have Aaron in Dutchess County calling. Thanks for calling.
Hi, it's Ann, actually.
Oh, Ann. So go ahead.
I just want to make an observation. We're talking about the test questions being released, and you keep referring to what the state might respond to the questions that we're discussing here. This was implemented, fully implemented, with virtually no public discourse. And now we're looking backwards at what we did, and we're kind of being pigeonholed into what we're allowed to discuss about it. What do we think of these questions? And we have to challenge them in hindsight. You know, the big picture issue here is this was done without parental voice, without school boards. And so when Roy, for example, gives you a question that she or her daughter had a problem with on the exam, we should be talking about this in our local communities at our school board level. But the response is consistently, the state might say this, the state will say that, the state has said this. The big question about whether or not the state should have done this without public discourse, I think it's just a tremendous concern that keeps kind of escaping the discussion.
Thanks for the call, Ann. Loy, what do you think?
I think that she's accurate. I think the state has been doing things without parental input and, to be honest with you, without certain amounts of educator input for a very long time.
But Anne, and Anne, are you still there? I think we've lost her. Okay. The state has said, and they said earlier this hour in our recorded interview with their deputy commissioner of curriculum, mm-hmm. that releasing these test questions are all about community feedback and that they are listening now.
After the fact, yes. The teachers have been... Not teachers. NYSED has been making changes to school curriculums and school requirements.
New York State United Teachers.
New York State Education Department.
Okay. You said NYSED. Okay.
NYSED.
Oh, NYSED.
Sorry.
Not NYSUT.
Okay. No, not NYSUT.
NYSED. New York State Education Department. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yes. John King.
Yes, John
King. And the Regents have been making changes to policies and procedures in school districts across the state for some time now without parental input and, in many cases, without school board input. Though that information comes down through the regional superintendents, through the district superintendents, and then it's given to the school board as, well, this is what NYSED says that we have to do. And rare is the school board that is allowed, I would say allowed to question. Obviously, they're allowed to question anything, but rare is a school board that successfully questions those things.
All right, let me grab one more quick call before the hour ends here. This is Carla in Rochester. Go ahead, Carla.
Hi. I'm curious about the portfolio method, and I have this notion that if you're dealing with individual students on their portfolio in terms of classroom management, what are you doing with the other 24 students? And I would think it would be an advantage to teach all the children at the same time. And so I'm just wondering how you manage the individual versus the group instruction.
Well, it's certainly easier to teach. If you have 25 students and you need to teach them all at the time and there's same time and there's only one of you, it's very much easier to teach all of the students the same things at the same time. And that's, I think, a large part of the reason why portfolio schools do not exist in large numbers, because it does require more teachers. It does require a better student-to-teacher ratio so that you can set the children up with projects that are meaningful and instructional, have instructional value for them, and handle them all at the same time. It's impossible to do a portfolio school with one teacher and 24 students.
All right, I've got 40 seconds to get through the last comment here. This is Juliet posting on our Facebook page. Juliet says, I've got a comment for Evan Dawson and guests. My daughter just completed second grade at School 23 in Rochester. She hasn't yet begun the rigorous testing that accompanies the Common Core. I can say, though, that she absolutely adored the second grade Common Core curriculum, learning about ancient Greek myths, tall tales, the War of 1812. These subjects were very exciting for her, did a great job of capturing her imagination. This exciting curriculum seems like a very good thing to me. Loy?
There are always going to be students who fit any given instructional method. And there are good things in Common Core. Never let it be said that I did not say there are not good things in Common Core, because there are. My problem with Common Core is that it wants every student to do it the same way. And while it may have worked for this student, it may not work for others. And for them, the answer is too bad.
Thank you for taking the time, Loy. Kira, good luck to you in ninth grade. And, you know, you're going to spend more time with Mom as a homeschooler, but you're smiling about that. Thank you for taking the time to come in and share your testing experience with us. We appreciate that. Thanks to the State Education Department for making Ken Wagner available as well today. And we hope, if you're a teacher, if you're a superintendent, if you're a parent, that you will continue this conversation with us going forward. There's so much more to say, and our job is not to advocate any one side, but to make sure the conversation continues here on Connections. Thanks to everybody involved. Short break and right back with more.